Hi, this is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendosky.
And this is Start Writing.
And today is part one of dialogue, style, structure, and grammar. We're going to be talking about some of the really basic pieces, just the basic grammar of dialogue. But one of the things we're going to look at is instances where readers and beta readers, but a lot of readers will kind of think you've made a grammar mistake and you haven't. And so we want to talk about how to deal with those issues. And then look at some of the styling points, how you can move around action beats and tags to shift the meaning of a sentence without adding more words or trying to explain something to create that emphasis. So just a lot of different techniques like that. And if you follow the writing community on Twitter, you may have heard said is dead. And we will talk about what that means and why. And then, of course, when you can use a colon instead of a comma to offset dialogue. We will talk about how to bring a character qualities out in dialogue without slowing the pace of the novel. We might not get to all of that today, but that's how much research is done on the topic so far. So let's go ahead and get into it, the structure and grammar of dialogue. Before I get into the bones of this, a lot of style, structure, and grammar of dialogue serves to help the reader track and identify who is saying what and to reduce the word count. And there's going to be a lot of pieces of this episode are things we've discussed before, but we wanted to do a series of episodes on dialogue because it is really important, and to concentrate some of these pieces of information that are scattered through various episodes so that if you are having trouble with dialogue, you can just listen to this specific suite of episodes. It's kind of the trend we've done for the last little while. We'll do 6 months on a topic, and then we do another 6 months on another, and it kind of creates that suite. So if you're just wanting to focus on one thing, you can dig up all those episodes and focus on that topic. That's what we're doing here with dialogue. So word count is pacing. You know, we talk about pacing, it's how fast the story moves. But the way that's experienced by a reader is simply how many words are between one plot point and the next. And so if you follow these simple rules of dialogues, it can accelerate the pacing of your book without major rewrites. It does this by reducing the need to identify speakers and avoiding double identifying them. It's all about leveraging grammar to give information rather than writing out explanations. At the end, we want to try to understand how a reader experiences the words and story and to make that process as easy as possible. That is great writing, to make the reading process as easy as possible.
Man, I just have to say, I'm reading the book All the Pretty Horses. Have you ever read Cormac McCarthy?
I started The Road and then I switched to audio because I didn't feel like he was honestly like he doesn't fully leverage a lot of the recommendations for writing dialogue. And sometimes it's hard to track the speaker.
Yeah, I have a feeling that his way of writing is the exact opposite of what we're about to talk about.
Yeah. And I intentionally switched to audio on the road because I was having such a hard time with the speakers, and I knew that a good narrator would differentiate each voice. And, you know, if he got lost ever, he could contact McCarthy and be like, who's saying this line? And McCarthy would tell him in preparation for the audiobook.
Listeners who haven't read his stuff, he just leaves off all the dialogue tags and honestly a lot of punctuation as well, like no quote marks or anything. The interesting thing is that I think that he's doing that because he wants to increase the pacing, essentially. And it makes it more gritty and more real in some ways. But yeah, I get lost in his dialogue all the time because I can't keep track of who said what.
Yeah. Like I said, I read the first probably first 50 or so pages of The Road. And then I was like, I've got to do audio. I just can't. Every time there's dialogue, I get lost. And so that's pretty much how I do McCarthy now. I won't read one of his books because it's just too confusing to fight through.
Yeah, man. Now that you say that, though, that like doing the audiobook for you is a way to get around that problem.
Yeah.
But that means the narrator is going to add the dialogue tags in basically by his intonation, right?
Yep. Yeah. By varying that voice.
That means our books or any regular book has extra information in the audiobook that's actually slowing it down because the narrator should already be distinguishing. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
It's true, but we will talk about that. We're going to cover all of it. So initially, right, so just a basic grammar is, well, before I really talk about basic grammar, I'll talk about why I want to talk about it. So when I first started writing, anytime I wanted to do something, I always had to ask myself, how do you do this? What is the exact and right way to do this? And so I had to pick up fiction books and start reading through and be like, okay, this is how they're structuring it. This is how they know everything. So we'll cover some really basic things here. But as you know, we get deep, and that's just how we approach writing. But we want to make sure we cover the basics so that someone who's writing their first novel can pick up the podcast and not have to go searching through novel after novel to find the answers they're looking for. So you're always going to – any verbatim quote from a character is dialogue, and that's going to be surrounded in quotes. When you end the punctuation of that, you're going to have your mark there. So your periods, your question marks, all that are going to go in those quotes. The question mark, if they ask a question, will always go there. But if it's not the end of the sentence, then you'll have lowercase after that and then the period there. And you'll see that the really only time that applies is when you're using a tag. And I'll get into tags in just a minute here. If you have a line of description that describes how the person says the line of dialogue, you'll have a comma right before that line of dialogue appears. But if it's just like an action beat, they're doing something, there'll be a period before you have the quotation marks and the dialogue. So it's whether those are directly connected or not. So that's just the real basics here. So an example of when you use that tag, which is just kind of a short identifier, would be like, her voice was husky, comma, because I'm describing the dialogue, why, which is the dialogue, and then lowercase, said Amy, and that's the tag. Now, the phrase said Amy is one I disagree with using, because if we take out the proper noun and use just a simple one, then it's said she. And that's not how we talk in English. Nobody says that. People put, you know, said character name all the time in books. But if we convert it, it sounds weird. And you realize, oh, my gosh, they're framing things in a very unconversational way. Nobody talks that way or really even thinks that way, but it's been in novels so long. So I always tend to go more for Amy said, because that would convert to she said, which is how we talk and how we write normally outside of novelizations.
My Song of Locke book, I did said Amy, and in my other books, I do Amy said, because they're supposed to feel more modern.
Another problem here is I filled this little sentence with problems so we could attack them. Her voice was husky.
I have some more.
Yeah. Her voice was husky, comma, why, said Amy. But what we've done is we've double identified the speaker. Her is a reference to Amy, which should have been coming earlier in the paragraph, right? So we know who we're referring to. And said Amy is also a reference to Amy. I would cut out said Amy, because you've double identified the speaker. That's what you're wasting your words there. Her voice was husky identifies the speaker. And then it's just why.
And if that's not enough, because you need Amy's name, then put Amy's voice was husky.
Yeah. So if we need to be more clear on identifying her. And at that point, now that comma makes perfect sense, right? Because the why doesn't stand alone anymore. So the next thing we want to talk about is what's called one actor per paragraph. And essentially, this is anytime a new speaker speaks or a new character takes an action, you start a new paragraph. Paragraphs are designed to help us follow who is acting and who is speaking. I'll get into some examples in a minute. But I try to think of this like the spotlight in a theater production. So the spotlight focuses on the person who is speaking or who is acting, and then it shifts as soon as someone else takes over. So that it's very clear to the audience, even if maybe you see the side of the person, and you can't see everybody's mouth who's moving, you still know who is speaking. And it does that here. And this also is really important for your pronouns, because it makes it easier to track who is doing what. If I start the paragraph with Eric and later I say he, you know that's he, Eric, because it's his paragraph. He is the actor in it, right? And so to go a little deeper into this concept, the subject that performs the verbs in that paragraph will always be Eric or an object. And if it ever switches where Eric is now the object, the receiver of an action, you will definitely be in a new paragraph because someone else is now the actor, right? With the exception of an object.
So something I've run into in this situation is occasionally as the actor is acting, I'll bring up who he is acting upon. So there are two names in the paragraph. And so then I'll have to like say the subject's name again.
Right.
But barring that, you can just say the subject's name once and then he or she throughout.
Yeah.
It just kind of simplifies.
Again, this is all about reader clarity so that as soon as it switches, they know. One of the things that is really confusing. So let me get into the example. So here's the example. "We can't do that," Amy said. "Then what will we do?" Eric pounded his fist on the table. But as it's written, that's all one paragraph. And here's the thing. The second line, "Then what will we do?" There is no way for a reader to know that Eric is saying that line of dialogue because it's in the same paragraph and it comes immediately after Amy said. There's no reason to think it's anyone else. So that's why we break that into a separate paragraph, is so that the reader knows, oh, there's someone different speaking. Even though Eric's name comes after, I still know it's a new speaker.
Yeah. Well, and so if you could put the break before Eric, and then what that's telling the reader is that, yes, that does go with Amy because Eric is in.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So if we chose to put the paragraph right after the line, "Then what would we do?" We know that Amy said both of those because they're in the same paragraph. There's not that confusion about who's saying what. Whereas if I have both characters as actors in this one paragraph, that line of dialogue is confusing. I have no idea who said it. It could be attributed to Amy or Eric. And anytime you have that kind of confusion, a reader has to disentangle it. And every time they have to disentangle, they lose the immersion and they lose the ease, right? So, I mean, TV is kind of a good thing. Like TV, you just sit back and you relax and TV happens to you, right? and that's kind of the experience you want to give a reader, is that the novel just happens. They don't have to stop and be like, wait, what's going on? And they stop and they have to start trying to disentangle. And now they're engaged in the active work of fixing your grammar and your presentation. So all of this is creating the ease of reading. That is the writer's job, to make reading and understanding the novel as easy as possible. So the colon, which you just barely mentioned, right? You would use a colon. So looking up the grammar rules on this, I'm pushing back against Jay here. Whenever you would use a colon to offset dialogue, when you're producing what is called like the first line is like a summary. The host made an announcement. That's the summary. And then I put a colon and then I put the actual statement of the host. You are all staying for dinner, right? And so that is the summary and then the actual dialogue there. So another example, he gave her a backhanded compliment. "You look like my sister." Now, I like the second example better, because the first one, while it's making the grammatical structure clear, it's redundant. The host made an announcement. You are all staying for dinner. If I was an editor, I would say, cut that line. Just use the dialogue. He's making an announcement. That's clear because he's saying the line of dialogue. Whereas in my second example, he gave her a backhanded compliment. "You look like my sister." Without that piece of information, you may not know that he's insulting this girl, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're aware about his feelings about his sister, you would have no idea that he thinks his sister's ugly and this girl. However, as much as you can use a colon to offset dialogue this way, I would recommend avoiding it. There is something about the indie publishing boom that has made a lot of readers feel like grammar experts and that they need to correct us. And when we use sort of esoteric or archaic pieces of grammar, then you're going to encounter corrections from readers. So you could easily put a comma here and a reader wouldn't correct you on that. And it would still read just fine. So even though you could use a colon, I would not.
Yeah, when you said here, he gave her a backhanded compliment, comma.
Yeah. So okay. He gave her a backhanded compliment, colon, "You look like my sister," is grammatically correct. It's a use of a colon to offset dialogue. But swap your colon for a comma, and I think you're going to get fewer, "Hey, this is a grammar error."
So let me offer a helpful comment and maybe a controversial one.
Okay.
So I like to I don't know if you've seen the there's an emoji that's a finger pointing forward in the sentence. You've probably seen it. I feel like the colon is that emoji. It's saying, I just referred to something and here it is. It's like pointing to what's next.
That's a good point.
That's the way I think of it. I think it's, once you get how a colon works, I think it's easy to overuse them. And so
right.
I'm I think in colons a lot, but I try to take them out as much as I can because, yeah, I did the same with the end dash.
So, and on this note of, you know, is this correct to do this, but you'll probably get flagged as wrong. Let's talk about when a character speaks grammatically incorrectly on purpose, right? That's part of their character, right? How do you present that to an audience so that they're not being like, hey, you made a grammar error here. You need to fix this. Be like, I don't need to fix that, right? You don't want to get that angry review on Amazon. This book is full of grammar errors because your character speaks grammatically incorrectly. So how do you do that? And this is what we call using a lamp or a spotlight. And this technique is used when a writer breaks the rules on purpose and wants to make sure the reader knows that it's on purpose. So here's an example. Me and Jem went down to the river. Aunt Susie corrected me. It's Jem and I. That's what I said. Me and Jem, right? And so what we have here is the character has been corrected. So it's now clear the writer knows the rule, how to follow it. And then the character is either unable to recognize the correction or deliberately going against it. And so that's what's called a lamp. You take a moment, so you show it to the audience, be like, see, I did it on purpose.
Yeah. And I mean, so that example you gave is directly in dialogue. Sometimes your narrator is going to have the same issue. And I think maybe the way to do that is to just make it prevalent enough or consistent enough that it's clear that it wasn't a single mistake, but it's part of the character's pattern.
What this example is it's also what we call a buy, right? We now buy the right to break more rules of grammar with this character because we've illustrated up front. So if your character is going to, like if you're writing in the first person POV and your character is going to be breaking rules of grammar in both their narrative and their dialogue, you're going to want to do your buy very early on. Because if the rest of the, if I start to encounter other grammar errors in that character's dialogue, I don't need a lamp for every single one. I've bought the idea that this character is grammatically incorrect. And as long as you're consistent, you know, they make that same grammar error all the time and you've done your buy-in with your lamp and spotlight, I think you're going to be fine and you're not going to get a wave of corrections and complaints in reviews.
Man, I wonder what would happen if Cormac McCarthy had been an indie.
I think this is going to be a little bit shorter for us today as an episode, but I know Jay's got to take off. I've already taken up too much of his time. So we'll cut the episode here. And next time we'll be talking about action beats and tags, what to do when you've got both and passive voice and just a lot. There is a lot to cover in dialogue. We may spend more than 6 months here. We will see.
So we also want to tease that we are launching a Patreon soon, and we have some really awesome tiers that we've worked out, and we've got some great content that we're excited to show you.
Yeah.
So that's something we want you to look forward to in the coming weeks. Yeah. Keep an eye on.
One of the things I'm most excited about is what I call the pins. And so this would be like a little pin you could just wear on a lapel, on a shirt, or just wherever, a collar. And the point is, it would identify you as a fan of Start Writing, but more importantly, it identifies you as an author to other authors. I talk a lot about the value of my live group and even just having Jay. We met in person. We exchange manuscripts. We have meetings where we just talk about our plots and different problems we're having. And because we know each other in real life and we're friends in real life, it gives us just this great wealth of another person to bounce our ideas off of. And the reason I'm excited about and I want the pins is to help listeners find other writers and to be able to develop that in-person relationship. Because as much as I know there are online groups like Scribblefile, you just end up talking much more in depth in a person-to-person conversation about your books, particularly with another writer who understands the process of writing. So we wanted to have this tool to help you identify other writers that are around you in your real life so you can start developing these friendships and these collaborations.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm super excited for those as well.
All right. As always, thanks for listening. That's the end of our episode. It is time to start writing.